Hey there, lead the team. Welcome to another great episode. Today I have for you Kim Enan, who is the Chief Strategy Officer over at Starcom Worldwide with over 25 years of industry experience. Now, if you're not familiar with Starcom, they've been around for over 80 years, and they're the global communications planning and media leader with more than 7,000 employees and over 100 offices around the world. They partner with loads of the leading marketers and brands, including Bank of America, Best Buy, Kellogg, McDonald's, Samsung, so many. And Kim is a self-proclaimed leadership training addict. So she is in good company with us here on Lead the Team. Kim, welcome to Lead the Team.
Oh, so happy to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
So we're talking about leadership training and how you dive right in. What's been one of the more memorable leadership training moments or ideas that's been helpful to you as you've gone through this?
Yeah, so great question. And I would say so much of it comes down to several different courses that I've taken that are underpinned by the philosophy and teachings of Brené Brown. I know that Brené is not for everybody, but she is certainly for me. And I had the pleasure, we brought in-house through our in-house coaching program at the time, her pilot program that eventually became her Dare to Lead corporate training program, and very much built on the philosophy of vulnerability, which was new to me, but certainly has had a real transformational impact on the way that I lead today versus the way that I probably led 10 years ago.
All right. Well, that's a good cliffhanger. What's the before and after in terms of how you approach leadership?
Yeah. And I could actually pinpoint a specific moment because it was really watershed for me. Up until this particular moment, I think incorrectly, that as a leader, there were certain behaviors and attitudes, beliefs that I was supposed to espouse. And so it was almost as if I would show up to work and I would, take off the jacket that is Kim, the person outside of work, and then I would put on the leadership jacket, and that I had expectations for myself that there was a certain way that I need to act, which then in retrospect, I'm sure was much more performative than it was authentic. Mm-hmm. And I can remember going through what was this pilot program for Dare to Lead, a really small group of us, because mm-hmm. not only it was a pilot program, but when you're starting to explore what being authentic and vulnerable is, you need a sense of safety and security in that environment, which we had built. And we were halfway through a really intense 2 days. There were boxes of tissues in the room, and rightfully so. And I remember it was my turn to share. And I just looked at everybody. I'm having a really, really hard time today because of a whole bunch of stuff that's going on in my personal life. And I'm trying really hard not to bring this into the room. And one of my peers looked at me and she said, "But you have to. Like, that's part of who you are. That's what we are doing here. And you can't lead the way you want to lead if you're trying to keep those two parts of your whole so separate." And in addition to having kind of a moment of emotional release, as I, in the moments and days following that, had an opportunity to reflect, I did have kind of this eye-opening, pivotal, and for me, really transformative realization that I wasn't showing up as my whole authentic self at work. And asked myself, what would it look like if I did that? If I was more vulnerable, if I didn't put that jacket on that was probably made of a ton of armor with my work self and really worked hard to integrate the two. And I can tell you, after, obviously it didn't happen overnight, but after working on that, I not only believe I am a more approachable leader and a more compassionate leader as a result, but I have a much greater job satisfaction because there's I'm one integrated person versus trying to manage two different selves within the same body, mind and heart.
I totally get that. I also compartmentalize my life in a lot of different ways. And I was convinced like my work people were not going to know my friends and family. My friends and family were not going to know my work people. Just keep those two worlds separate. No pictures of anybody anywhere. They're like, why are you doing that? I was like, it just seemed easier to be able to walk out the door and not have to worry about like people asking about my personal life and everything. And maybe I was more concerned about knowing too much about their personal life,
which is like, fair. Oh,
that's gonna bring me into the drama. But yeah, I discovered, there's a certain benefit and synergy when you let these worlds start to come together a little bit more and build a community upon that. Whenever you start taking those steps to be more open about your personal life, what was the ultimate benefit of it? I mean, you said you're more approachable, but does that mean, was that a benefit or were people coming to you all the time? And then you're like, wait a minute, I got work to do.
Oh, I see it as entirely a benefit. We are all just the same human. And if you build an environment where you help your team feel safe enough to share the things that they need to share, to your point, not everything, but share the things that are potentially exciting them, that are giving them passion and energy at work, the things that are troubling them and impacting their mental focus or their time. Those things ebb and flow, and creating an environment where people feel safe and secure to be their whole authentic self, I believe, allows them to be much more gratified in the work that they do and creates a better environment as it relates to retention of those top talents.
You said that your job satisfaction went up. Is that right? When you started taking this new approach?
100%. I felt less pressure. I think to my earlier point about some of the ways that I was leading, I felt as though in retrospect was probably a little performative. I think I was emulating the behaviors and the approach of what I believed it meant to be a leader versus being Kim as an authentic leader. And so that's why I keep using this language of transformative impact, because it allowed me to have my own personal leadership style that's aligned with my values. And because it's aligned with my values, my job satisfaction has gone up tremendously.
Yeah, again, a synergy with that. When it's your own energy source, it's your own values, you're doing it your way, the authenticity just feels better, and it's probably a lot more sustainable over the long haul. And obviously, you've been with Starcom for a while, and you've risen to the ranks. So this is something that's, I would say, is literally paid off in terms of your growth. When along your path did this breakthrough moment occur? Was it early on? Or were you deeper in your career?
I was deeper into my career. I was already in a fairly senior leadership position. And I would say a regret then would be that I couldn't have had access to the conversations and the skill building that allowed me to get there. But I got there nonetheless. And so I'm just so grateful for it.
Excellent. So what's the worst leadership advice that you've ever heard?
I wish I had a really good zingy one-liner that is just so telegraphically incorrect or patently wrong. But I would say that the worst leadership advice I've ever gotten is the lack of leadership advice. And if I think back across my 25 years, full transparency, it'll be 25 years in August, to your point, with the same company, I've had a lot of tremendous, tremendous leaders who took a real active role in helping me shape the leader I am today. But there have, of course, been leaders who didn't proactively give feedback, who didn't proactively ask what I needed or wanted as I was developing as a leader and a contributor, and therefore didn't offer any leadership advice. And
leadership silence.
I think that it, you know, the whole just keep doing what you're doing, no matter what level you're at. We're all on a journey where leadership does evolve. We can continue to get better as leaders. And so the lack of advice to me is a signal of a lack of care in my future, which again, at a certain level, so much of my future is and should be self-directed. But I think we all aspire to have leaders and mentors who are so invested in you that they offer that leadership advice.
Yeah, it's a real call to action for leaders to help others to improve yourself, to help others improve, or really it's like an abdication of leadership. I mean, it's like, hey, this is your opportunity. Don't abdicate it.
Yeah. And I think about advocacy, it's funny that you use that word because there's almost in my mind a trajectory of advocacy across one's career. And this isn't, you know, true 100% of the time, but you spend the first chapter of your career advocating for yourself, for growth opportunities, for compensation packages that you believe reflect your worth. And then hopefully for people, you get to that stage in your career where you're advocating for others. And that is your job as a leader to advocate for them. And then if you're really keen on advocacy, I hope that I get to a point in my career where not only am I advocating for others, but I'm advocating for a purpose. That there is a driving force in the way that I'm contributing to others as a leader, to the corporate world, in the way that I'm advocating for a larger purpose, a change in the industry that I work in that will be more of a legacy and a lasting impact beyond kind of where I started, and that it was advocating for oneself.
Yeah, I love that. Sometimes I ask the question, when you leave your organization, your role one day, what do you get the legacy is going to look like? And you just nailed it. It sounds like you want to have a group of people that you've impacted. And people, a lot of times people think about their legacy as like the name on the building or the name on the report. And you're really thinking about, you're talking about it. It sounds like coming through the people that you've touched along the way.
100%.
So when's the time you had a twist or failure in your career and how did it lead to your success or growth on down the road?
So I have two stories that I could tell. And
yeah, lay it on us.
One small that had a big impact, and one that I feel is probably a shared experience with a lot of people. Yeah. I'll start first with the smaller but really impactful moment for me. I was leading a piece of business. So before I really focused on strategy, typical to the agency world, I came up through junior level positions and eventually was running a bigger piece of business. And at that time, I was running the Disney Parks business, one of the best clients I've ever worked with. Can't say enough about them. And I remember being in my performance review at the end of the year. I'm firstborn in my family and all of the tropes that people assign to that role totally applied to me.
Leading
very
out
driven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Great.
I expect that. I don't want to just hear an A. I want to hear an A plus. And I remember this performance review for two reasons. One, I was transferring from one manager to another. So I had two senior leaders giving me this performance review. And more importantly, I hear many great things, as a lot of people hope to hear in a performance review. Then I heard, you're not very creative. And not everybody needs to be creative, but you're not very creative. So if there's something you want to work on, maybe work on that. I've, first of all, never heard that, but I've never asked that question. So maybe it's true. So I walked away from that conversation, and in all the labels that we assign to ourselves, rightly or wrongly, I added a new label, which was Kim, not creative. So for a while, I would say a better part of a couple years, the way that I addressed that was, well, if I'm not creative, then I just need to surround myself with people who are creative. And my job is to help them contribute to the creative thinking and the creative problem solving, because clearly I can't do it myself. And as I sat on that over the course of a year or two, I made a purposeful decision to make that label not true. I wanted to like pull that badge off of my sweater, right? That said, Kim, hello, my name is Kim and I'm not creative. And I decided it was going to be something that, like a lot of things in my life, I was just going to work really hard at. Maybe it wasn't something that came naturally, but couldn't I get incrementally better? And I do think it's a skill that is something that is so much about a mindset shift. Being creative is about taking risks inherently, because not all creative is like, I'm in a creative department and I'm designing something. We need creative thinking in so many different capacities. And so I decided I was going to work on that. And fast forward a couple years, and I was on a team that we did as part of team building. We gave different awards to different people. And I still have it today. And this was probably 10, maybe more years ago. Kim, most creative on the team. And then I went to management and I put a business case together to launch a creative department within the organization. And it's something that, yeah, not only did I work hard at, but to me, the lesson that is transferable to other people is so much broader than that. And that is, being creative is so much more about mindset and being willing to take risks and surrounding yourself by people who are going to encourage that. So that was definitely a moment where it felt, at that time when I was getting the feedback, that I had failed. But it was an opportunity for me to turn that into something that I think is a strength today, or at least not a strength, something that I continue to work at and not wear as a badge.
There's a lot going on in there. And you mentioned Disney. So I'm experiencing it like a Pixar movie, like on Pixar, like on multiple levels happening.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, and thinking back, if that person maybe mislabeled you as not being creative. And then, as we often do, myself included, take on this narrative that someone else assigned to you. And turns out you're really creative. And yes, you sound like you went through training and you focused on it. But I'm just curious, do you think it was a false narrative that had been assigned to you and you kind of took it on, or because when I think about creativity a lot too, I like what you said about risk taking. And I often think about is creativity is something that to be unleashed, and some people are willing to go there, that everybody had it to some degree. I don't know. What's your sort of
feedback on that? Yeah. First of all, the story works so much better if I patently wasn't creative at the time. I suspect that the reality was that for this individual manager, perhaps we hadn't been in the environments where she had seen either me be creative or the potential for me to be creative.
Yeah.
So, I rightly or wrongly, I'm glad the conversation happened because it did then become something that if you follow the thread, not only did I work on the skill set, but then it led to career changing moves and new departments that I established. However, again, back to the advocacy for others, I think more importantly, based on where I'm at today, it's the recognition that creativity being risk-taking requires the right conditions for people to thrive, for people to feel safe and secure so that they can take those risks and sharing their ideas and building upon the ideas of others. And that is something that I try really, I put a lot of time and energy into developing that psychological safety in one-on-one relationships, as well as in a group environment, and try to really be the cheerleader and encourage people to share those ideas with others.
And from a personal level, I love, and I wish we all would do this, is if we have a narrative that seems feels true to us or someone's assigned to us, we don't like it, that we're willing to challenge it and go develop ourselves. And it sounds like you really, you could have just completely said, you know what? I'm not creative. I'm not going to do that kind of stuff. And that's just not me. And my boss has validated it. But you doubled down. You're like, you challenged that and you developed and you were richly rewarded with opportunities. And then you had the chance to create a whole culture of, you know, surrounding this idea. And I mean, Starcom, creativity is pretty darn important to what you're all about in that business, right?
100%. And it's creativity beyond the creative department that really matters to that applied creativity. Yes, we come up with incredible content programs with our media partners that help our clients' brands shine, help them meet their business objectives. But we are in an industry that changes so fast. And so we need creativity to manifest itself in our technology department, with our engineers, with our media planners, with our insights personnel, as they look across different data sources and extract meaning. And all of that requires a level of that applied creativity. And I think we're at a time in the corporate world where we are seeing a bit of an imagination gap that will likely only continue to grow as we look at automation and AI and become increasingly GPT, important. And I think we are going to continue to see with that technology leading companies putting increased value, or at least this is my high dream, increased value and importance on creativity, so that we're letting the algorithms and the automated processes within our organization do the rote requirements, but that we've got the right humans who can make those inspired connections that help transform our clients' business. So I hope creativity continues to be of increased importance in the corporate world.
Are you willing to say that any leader can be creative?
100%. I really do. Again, because it isn't about coming up with a slogan or even a new way to approach advertising. There's creativity every single moment. If we don't have creative thinking within an organization, you stay stagnant. And that's when an organization becomes vulnerable. And so if you take that expansive definition of creativity and connect it to the necessary risk-taking that is involved in every corporate world in a thriving, growing company, yeah, I think everybody can be. And if they can't, then I don't know that that individual is going to be putting themselves on that path for shaping the corporate world going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great thing to, for people to challenge themselves. If they have this thing that, hey, I'm not a creative person, that, you know, we're going to leave that to the marketing department or the creatives in the group.
Yeah.
And that's a limited scope of view that could limit your career. And you're really, it's a call to action to rethink that. Now, I don't want to miss the other twist or failure in your career that you said, because you said you had two.
Yes.
What's the second one?
The second one, I think, is something that so many people face. And that was, I was probably midway through my career. I had been managing pieces of business for a while. And I guess the easy way to phrase how I was feeling was good old burnout. It was
good old burnout.
A little bit good old burnout. Everybody faces it. And mine was a little bit less about the workload, which I think is oftentimes what drives burnout for some people. For me, it was also a realization that the work that I needed to do just wasn't as fulfilling as some of the work that I had done in the past. And I had not just 1 foot out the door, I had 2 feet out the door. And for somebody who has been at the company for coming up on 25 years, you know how this ends. And yes, that it didn't result in me completely walking out the door, because there was one person who read the signals, and I was very subtle and professional. It was something that they read in the way that I was showing up and the change in the way that I was showing up that I was deeply disconnected to the work that I was doing. And this person took me aside. And again, this story is so common, but, you know, connected me to somebody else within the organization. And the work that this other part of the organization did, they focused solely on strategy. I had come up through media, and most of the people in that department had come from the creative side. They were planners, they were researchers. And so on paper, I didn't have the credentials to make that leap and pivot, although that was the work that I was really wanting to do. Not only did this one person read me, this other person took a chance on me. And it was overnight, like a light bulb went on. Like, I was just so energized. Maybe not a light bulb. It was like somebody put the world's largest battery inside of me. I, again, overnight just had so much more energy, inspiration. That creativity was really front and center. Yes. And the thing that I take away from that experience is really twofold. One, back to that advocacy, there's nobody in the driver's seat of your career except for yourself. And I think early on in my career, I probably thought I was sitting shotgun and my manager was in the driver's seat. But I realized that, well, I got lucky and somebody kind of reached down into the ditch and pulled me out. I was the one who was in control. I could have had those conversations and taken that risk. And the other thing that I still carry forward with me today is constantly being vigilant and looking for people who are sending the subtlest of signals that they might be in a similar situation. And so really bringing that empathy and compassion and good old observation skills to my interpersonal connections with other people to look for the people who might need that hand reached out to them, whether they be my direct report or somebody else within the organization, so that I can do for someone else potentially what that person did for me.
Well, this is the perfect capstone for this entire interview, because you started out with a story about being more vulnerable. And here you are laying it on the line to end with I get a little chill thinking about, you know, sharing your burnout story. And what I believe is burnout is a rite of passage, and you grow through this experience. And for the leaders listening, I mean, Kim's sharing the rawness of it, but you stuck with the company. It sounds like you jumped lanes a little bit, you got reinvigorated, and you're willing to take those steps, but also you got a help from a teammate in that experience. And now you're taking that on, it sounds like, inside the organization to help people. And I love that. I mean, you're role modeling it, you're sharing it, you're putting it out there, and you're really exhibiting your growth mindset as a leader. And I think a lot of people carry burnout as shame, and they keep it quiet and they don't want to share it with others, and they don't get better, or they don't get better quickly, and they don't have a chance to help others. And so you fully flip that narrative on its head.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that happens with burnout, and I've seen this with so many incredible talents over the years, is by not sharing that with other people, they just look for an exit ramp rather than a rest stop. And that's what I hope I can do with identifying some of those signals in other people, helping them navigate what some of those choices are that are something other than just the eject.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, keeping some of our amazing talent here, potentially just in different capacities, like I did in the lane shift.
Yeah. And when you burn out and you quit, don't be surprised if your next job, you burn out more quickly, or you show up burned out on day one. It's like was it JFK say, we have met the enemy and it is us. And mm-hmm. We have to resolve some of this. But yeah. In my book, The Quit Alternative, I'll talk about my experience with burnout and what I had to do to really work with that. And I find it helps me to stay unburned out and to stay motivated by helping others with it. And so it sounds like you found a common connection there too. I salute you for it in a big way, because executives especially, you know, it's harder to talk about this at the higher levels of the company, and you're putting it out there. So Kim, what's your parting thought for our listeners today?
Can I channel some Brené Brown, given that's my go-to?
Yeah, of course.
I wish I would have taken more risks in my career early on. So my parting thoughts from my dear friend Brené, because again, in my mind, we're friends because I channel so much of her philosophies into the way that I lead.
Yeah.
You can choose courage or you can choose comfort, but you can't have both. And so if you are truly sitting in the driver's seat of your career, you have to be making a series of big and small choices as to whether or not this is a point in your life where you do want the comfort and whatever that means for you and the choices that you make, or do you want to be courageous and all of the scariness that comes with that and the potential risk, but also the potential for reward. And one's not good and the other one's bad, but they are pretty mutually exclusive.
Great way to wind this up. I like you're really challenging the listeners to make a decision for themselves and do it with intention. And a great place to be a reflective for us all today. Thanks, Kim.